Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Each week, we select from a menu of topics that could impact business growth to discuss with experts from a wide variety of disciplines. And today at the cafe, I'm excited to be talking to you directly. I will be your guest today, and we are going to talk about branding and your brand, and more importantly, about the health of your brand. So hopefully, you'll stick with me over the next 25 minutes, and hopefully, we'll give you a few tips and tricks that you can use about determining if you have a healthy brand. So that is my question of the day. How healthy is your brand? Now, when you think about looking at your brand and about brand and business growth, if you will, and going down that road, there's so many different things that can impact growth. There's so many different things that can impact your brand, right? There's a lot of off-ramps that you might be able to take. Some might be about marketing, some might be about sales, some about employees, operations, finances, for example. These tend to be a little more internally things that are going on. But we also have to look outside. I call this market dynamics. I look at what can influence, internally or externally, the growth of your business, and in turn, the health of your brand. So externally, we need to look at the competition, technology. If you're not thinking about AI right now, depending on your business, you might be setting yourself up to have your brand become a little unhealthy as you move forward in your business growth plans. Looking at the economy and politics. Last week, I was having a conversation with somebody, and interest rates went up. That had an impact on their ability to borrow money, right? To ability to pay their debts and things like that. So you really, if you're thinking about the health of your brand and thinking about brand growth, you need to take into consideration all these different aspects that can have an influence on your brand. So really, though, if you think you're about creating a what I'll call a brand health shake, if you will, right? All that good stuff that we go to Jamba Juice for and places like that, right? We want all that healthy stuff in there. We want to have great sales. We want to have profitable sales. We want to see our business growing, not rapidly, but a nice steady pace, because sometimes rapid growth, you grow too fast, creates other issues and problems that can impact your brand. Talking about operations, working on a plan right now for a client. And one of the things we're looking at is year-over-year growth. But we're also looking at operations as well, right? Do we have the capacity? Can we have the wherewithal, if you will, to deliver on those sales when it comes to an operational and a capacity standpoint? And also, ultimately, about your customers and how healthy your customers are and what kind of relationship you have with them. So many times I find that sales organizations tend to sell to the customer, but they don't really nurture that customer and spend a lot of time with them to really build a relationship. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. And ultimately, you're after awareness, right? Ultimately, if they don't know who you are, right, you're not going to be considered. So you're not going to go from awareness to interest to consideration to trial and hopefully to a sale. So awareness becomes extremely important when it comes to thinking about branding. In fact, a healthy brand will have a significant impact on your awareness, and in turn, what I believe is on your bottom line as well, right? Because again, you want to get your product and services in demand. A healthy brand also affects your ability to sell, to attract and to hire new employees as well. So if you really want to continue to grow, that awareness, that healthy brand that you need to have has so many aspects and so many influences on everything you do as you move your business forward. Now, we think about all of this, and ultimately, I like to say what I want to happen is I want your customers to fall in love with your brand. Right? Because if they love your brand, that creates more opportunities for growth. There's that old saying, I think it was a shampoo commercial many years ago, probably dating myself, but it was like, I'll tell a friend, you'll tell two friends, she'll tell three friends, four friends, and so on and so forth. Right? Word of mouth is so powerful. And ultimately, if we could get word of mouth about our company and about our brands, that would really create a lot of opportunities for growth. In this day, with technology, however, the opposite can happen when it comes to social media. You give a customer a bad experience, and they will tell 1,000 friends or people, 1,000 people they don't even know. So it's really important as we think about the health of your brand, all these different aspects. I call them touch points. Any touch point you have with a customer or the marketplace in general, you need to deliver on your brand promise, because it's so easy to get sidetracked and so easy to get one person upset that can start that old adage, bad apple in the apple cart, or whatever it happens to be, can spoil everything. So again, every day you're going through, how can I keep my brand healthy? So let's talk about branding a little bit, right? So we all have different definitions to brands. Now, for me, a brand really needs to have something that's ownable, leverageable, and sustainable. Now, something, what I mean by ownable, is something that we have and no one else has in their brand, right? Something that they can't easily duplicate or imitate. That gives us leverage over the competition, gives us a competitive advantage when we're talking to potential customers, right? Because we own it. And sustainable, is it what you have sustainable over time, or eventually is it something easily to knock off? This is where I start to look at innovation departments and how can we stay innovative and stay ahead of the curve, if you will. Years ago, I was heavily involved in the action sports industry, and one of the things I was doing is I did a lot of public speaking, and I remember this one particular situation I was presenting to a group, and we were talking about this very subject, and a young lady raises her hand and says, I can't remember the product, but I'll say shoes for conversation. She goes, I have 17 different colors of shoes. That is my point of differentiation. I believe that's something I own and can really leverage in the marketplace. Before I could even open my mouth, somebody in the other side of the room raises their hand and says, well, you know what? I've actually got 18 different colors, right? And my point to her was something like a color, unless it's something you created and own the patent to and no one else can copy, is not something that's ownable, leverageable, sustainable, right? A lot of times we look at performance, we look at technology, we look at process, things that give us that point of differentiation. Why? Ultimately, it helps you defend against the competition, again, to give you that point and that distinct advantage. So what is a brand? For me, I use this definition. It's the one I always talk about. A brand is a set of expectations and memories and stories and relationships, both tangible and intangible, that taken together account for that rational side of your brand, your products, the touchy-feely, the stuff you can smell and taste, versus the emotional side. And it's really that emotional side that gives you a strong competitive advantage, because you have a strong emotional bond with your customers. It becomes much more difficult for a competitor to walk through the door and just knock you out, maybe because of price, right? Because price becomes irrational. Now, price is important, don't get me wrong, but you have to give them that emotional connection. Because ultimately, I say, why did they hire you in the first place, for example? Or why are they really thinking about hiring you? If everything is equal, everything is the same, then price becomes a distinct advantage. But then I say you're a commodity. But if you're not, then you have something of value. That is why you're hired the first time. This is what I believe. When I used to have an advertising agency, we'd always look at the value that we could bring. Price almost became insignificant. We could always talk around price. But we needed a value, some kind of emotional hook, if you will, that why they wanted to hire us, what's the value they thought that our services can bring, or whether it's manufacturing or anything else. What is that emotional connection? Right, I use Tide laundry detergent. Yes, I admit it, I use Tide. Why? Because my mother did. And I bet everybody who's listening today has some kind of an emotional connection from something from your childhood, whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. It's very difficult for a different competitive laundry detergent to get me to change my mind. The only thing that would get me to change my mind is my wife telling me so. Let's think about then about that experience. A brand has to deliver a strong experience. So I challenge you to ask yourself, are you delivering an experience to your customers? Because really, how you make people feel, how you make your customer feel, is more as important, if you will, as the product and services that you provide. Think about that. How you make your customers feel is as important as the product and services you provide. I use a technique called laddering, and I always look at kind of the technical aspects, if you will. Let's talk technology. You know, what's the functionality? What is this thing supposed to do? And then we layer it up, right? We ladder it up from the physical benefits, if you will, to the emotional benefits. Why is the IT guy going to hire us or hire our product? What is that emotional connection he has with it? Maybe ultimately he's a hero, right? He found a technology that saved the day, saved the company a lot of money. Maybe he got a raise So again, you're always looking for that connection emotionally and about the experience. Experiential marketing, you've probably heard a lot about that. And it is about that, right? We talk about customer service. Customer service isn't experiential. Trust me, if their customer service is your main contact with your customers, you're in trouble. Because they're calling because you're being reactive because there is a problem. I worked with a company about a year ago, and they asked me to interview some of their customers, which I did. And it was very educational. We were really looking for a hook. What could we use going forward as that point of differentiation? And what we found is they loved the customer service people. When they had an issue or problem, they were right on the ball. They were right there. And that was the experience they had with the organization. The other thing I heard is I was the first person to actually, from not customer service, to talk to them in over a year. So what kind of experience did they have? Not such a good one. And the problem is, when reviews came up and new people came into the organization, they ran the risk, and it happened to them, potentially to lose that business because they had no relationship and they had no experience with those people. And their customers, other than customer service based on issues, had no relationship with the brand. This is a quote by Scott Cook, founder of Inuit. A brand is no longer what we tell the customer it is. It is what the customers tell each other it is, right? So think about that. A brand is no longer what we tell the customer it is. It is what the customers tell each other it is, right? This is back to because of technology and social media. It's very easy now for customers to engage not only with the brand, and I think a lot of brands do a bad job in engaging with their customers, but the customers can engage with each other. So it's really important to make sure if our customers are telling other customers what the brand is about and telling us what the brand is about, that we need to make sure we're constantly staying in touch so we understand, right? Keeping a pulse on your brand, on the marketplace, keeping a pulse on the health of your brand. So I talked about market dynamics a little while ago, and one of the things that I always look at is I use kind of this strategic model, and there's kind of questions that I ask myself when really thinking about the brand. So I'm going to give you four little points. I want you to think about these the next time you're developing a strategic message or thinking about your brand within the marketplace, launching a new product, expanding into new markets. It's a great little tool, and it's very effective. The first question I always ask is, what is the current competitive position in the marketplace? Are you a new entry? Are you a distant challenger, a strong challenger, or are you a leader in the marketplace? Now, these become important, right? What's the core strength that you can win on? Is it about the product? Is it about a concept? Is it about an experience or about price? How connected is your customer to your brand? Now, if you're a new entry and maybe you're coming out on price or you got something unique, but they don't know who you are, that is a different dynamic, if you will, within the market that you're going to compete on than if you're a leader, you have a strong product, a great experience, you're not competing on price, and they're extremely connected to you. If you think about just what I said, depending on the combination of these attributes, your brand takes on a different role, not only in the marketplace that you're in, but the ones that you might want to expand. So if you're a leader, you're constantly making sure that you're delivering that leadership message, that your brand is healthy, things are going on. If you're a new entry, you're really looking for a place that you can kind of slice off or a way to get into the marketplace to help differentiate yourself. And then ultimately, the fourth point is, what is your current business situation? Are you a startup? Are you growing? Are you stagnant? Are you declining? All these different factors really come into play when you start thinking about the health of your brand. So I ask you again, do you have a healthy brand, right? I look at things, I call it the four pi, right? So the first P is, what's my purpose, right? What's your why? What about positioning? If you think about positioning, I'll give this to you really quick. Really just map out your customer needs against what you do best and what your competitors do best. And you look for that slice, if you will, within that model of where you can win and where what your customers want and need and what you do best is not overlapped with what your competitors are doing. Then if you look at the rest of the P's, promise. What does your brand promise? If you tell someone your brand promises, I'm going to return a call in 24 hours, and you don't call them back, well, then you just broke your promise and you've got a lot of other issues. What's your personality of your brand? In many founding companies and small to medium-sized companies, the personality of the brand is based on the founders. And then, of course, the I and the four pi is identity. What is your identity? So I've got 10 questions, critical questions that I'd like to give to you today to really think, and I want you to ask yourself. Question number one, do you know which customers are most valuable in terms of potential revenue and profitability? Now, all these really focus around how healthy is your brand if you can answer these questions. If you can answer yes to all of these questions, you're in good shape. If you can't, then you need to start rethinking things, right? So if it's a yes, a no, or hey, I'm not sure, then we need to have a conversation. So do you know which customers are most valuable in terms of potential revenue and profitability? Why is this important? So many times salespeople spend a lot of time focusing on new customers or acquisitions that may not be going to generate the most revenue and the profitability, right? So thinking about those, if you look at like a renew, recapture, and acquire strategy or an article I wrote about, which sell more, sell two more, and sell four more, which is on my website, on my blog, it's really, where do you want to focus your efforts when it comes to customers? Do you truly understand your buyers? Question two, and how they make purchase decisions. Here I like to talk about buyer personas and customer journey, or a customer first strategy, right? You have to understand your customers. A client told me one time, yeah, we understand our customers. We have a lot of job titles. We know exactly who they are. You don't, right? Because you don't know. If your customer is a millennial, how they consume information is most likely video. They love videos. If you're talking to a boomer, most likely they like printed materials. They want to print it out. They want to touch it and feel it. They like white papers, right? So you have to understand. You have to understand where they are in that process and how they make those decisions. There was a stat, and I'll probably get it wrong, but it's like 75 or 80% of all B2B decision research is being made online before they ever pick up the phone and call your company, right? So you need to think about how they make those purchases. Question number three. Is your brand message differentiated and inspiring versus being based on what you do and who you are, right? You don't want to just tell them what you are. That gets very rational. Hey, we're great. We're wonderful. You want to hire us? Nah. What you really want to talk about is what your product or service is going to do for your customer's customer or for them, right? Because they're going to probably sell to somebody else. So you want to make sure you're really understanding that value that your brand brings to them. Question number four. Do your customers and prospects truly understand what problems you solve and how you do it better than the competition? Now, this is an interesting question, and actually, I'm going to use myself as an example. Years ago, I was heavily involved in market research and quantitative market research, and I was talking to a customer, a longtime customer. We were doing some studies, and at the end of our meeting, he said, look, I've got to get you out of here. I've got the qualitative guys coming in. We're going to do a bunch of focus groups. And I was like, what do you mean you're doing a bunch of focus groups? He said, well, you're quant and they're qual. I said, no, I do everything. I'm a market researcher. And his answer was, I didn't know. You never told me. This actually happened to me again. Lessons learned about a year ago, doing some work and helping an organization out and giving them some leads on PR and things like that. And they told me very excitedly one day they had hired a branding firm and they were really excited. And I looked at him and said, I do branding. I'm a brand strategist as well. And they said, I have no idea. So you have to understand that your customers may not understand all the products and services that you deliver. It sounds crazy. In a research study I did not too long ago, I said to the participants, would your customers recommend you? The answer was pretty much 90% said yes. Then I asked, do they really understand all the products and services that you sell? And only about 10 or 15% said yes. So how can they can only recommend you based on what they know? If they don't know your full gambit, they can't recommend you to anybody else. But more importantly, they're probably not utilizing and purchasing products and services from you that you already sell that they're buying from somebody else. Question five, are you producing marketing content that your customers need when they need it? And in the form they wish to consume it. And I touched on that just a second ago because we started talking about videos for millennials and things like that. So really spend the time doing buyer personas. And not just the buyer persona for the person that you're talking to, but everybody in that organization that may touch your product or service. Case in point, IT guy says, hey, we need some new software. His manager says, well, go ahead, let's get it going. The IT guy does the evaluation, but the CFO writes the check. Now, if the CFO has no idea about what you're doing or anything else, then you're at a disadvantage. So think about buyer personas way beyond just a job title, right? Who are these folks? Get to know them. This is how you build strong emotional relationships. Number six, are you allocating marketing resources based on specific marketing objectives and toward accounts with the greatest revenue potential? This is an area that you really start to think about when you get into segmentation. Now, segmentation is important because you need to know where your revenue is coming from and who are those people within those. And it's an interesting point when you want to expand your marketplace to understand that, right? So if you're spending all your marketing dollars on the segment that isn't necessarily the one generating the best revenue. Talking to a company early about 6 months ago, and their marketing dollars were spread across five specific verticals. But when we got into doing analysis, we found that over 45% of their business came from one vertical, yet it was only getting 20% of the marketing dollars. And there was a lot more opportunity still within that vertical. So we needed to understand how we shift stuff around. So marketing isn't just about marketing to everybody, and we can get into a lot of messaging, things like that, because based on segments, who you're talking to, the messaging is going to change as well, and it becomes very important. Again, back to those buyer personas, those pesky buyer personas, you need to understand who you're talking to. Question seven, do you have more A players versus C players on your marketing team? Now, if you've read Jim Collins' Good to Great, you know, we start talking about the right people on the bus. And that is the goal. Do we have the right people on the bus to help you achieve your sales and marketing goals and your business goals? And then you have to even look like, do you have the right people in the right seat? Right? So you have to step back and really evaluate the team that is moving you forward. And I say marketing, but sales and marketing team. Are they the right people that can help you achieve your goal and carrying the message? So many times in recent studies that I've done and conversations that I've had actually on this show, we talked about onboarding. And in a recent study, it said that that CEOs let train their salespeople 1 week or less before they put them in the field. So how can they carry that message? How do they know the essence of you? And how can they bring that forward with a week or two of training, right? They have to be immersed. They have to buy into it. They have to drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, right? They have to really understand what your brand is about. Why? Because you're going to stick them in front of a customer and they can't necessarily answer all the questions. And what you don't want is, I'll have to get back to you. I'll have to get back to you. I'll have to get back to you. Question number eight, is marketing generating enough quality leads for sales team to exceed their revenue targets? Now, this is a long discussion on lead generation and things like that, but ultimately set the parameters of how you're going to qualify what is a good lead, right? There are a lot of tools out there that you can implement. Happy to talk to you about them. And I'll give you, at the end, I'll tell you how to get a hold of me and we can chat about this, that help generate better quality leads to make sure that your sales team is getting those. But you have to also think that old adage that sales and marketing are always against each other, right? So you have to make sure there's a program in place that if marketing generates it, sales can't make one phone call, say, yeah, they didn't pick up, I'm out of here. Question number nine, are you customizing campaigns and specific content for vertical segments, buyers, and geographies? We talked about that a little while ago. You have to understand who you're talking to, back to buyer personas, back to the marketplace, back to the people making the decisions. You have to understand that one message from your business does not get you there. You have to differentiate your messages based on who you're talking to, right? If you're talking to me, I want to make sure you understand me, right? That gets into personalization a little bit. And we have a lot of conversations about that as well. How can you personalize? And by understanding them and having that relationship and emotional connection, you can do that. Question number 10, are you making marketing decisions based on data, insights, or just intuition? Now, having said I was a head of marketing background in qualitative and quantitative and predictive analytics, I'm a little biased to this one. Don't make decisions by talking to the people in the room. They are not your customers. Let me repeat that. Talking to people around the table that work for your business are not your customers. Get out there, speak to your customers. It doesn't have to be very extensive or long, right? You can do one-on-ones. You can run a focus group or have, I call it grandmother research, sticking your toes into the water. The point is, get some data, make some decisions on it. So again, after all, what we want to look at is how do you think about your brand? Get everybody in alignment that's really going to be focused on working together. Take the time, really focus on this, and A Harvard Business Review article, this will be my last parting comment, about CEOs said they spend less than 3 hours a month planning and working on their business. This is what you need to do to make sure your brand stays healthy, wealthy, and wise, if you will. Spend time working on your business. Again, to achieve a healthy brand for the long-term success. Thank you again for joining us in the cafe today. We can find out more about me and read my blogs at the Ponzi Group. That's PonziGroup.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to the show at TheBusinessGrowthCafe.com. And coming soon to Stitcher, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Actually, I think I'm on iTunes as of today. So join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.